We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
I have a very long day ahead of me, so I'm going to need to keep this thing moving.
This is hour two of Fourier's 25 for 25. 25 hours on the radio with the goal of raising $25,000 for the American Diabetes Association.
Let's do this!
Brought to you by Test Strips, Think Inside the Box, Northeast Men's Clinic, specializing in men's sexual health, Omnipod Insulin Management System, McFarlane Energy, Shaw's and Star Market, and Atlantic Power. PowerCleaning.com. To make a donation, visit WEEI.com/25.
All right, 1 hour down for the big fella.
Pretty
got
easy.
24 to go. Of course
pretty
it is.
Pretty easy. That
and
was
hour
quick.
Two. Hour two.
Yeah,
cool. Will be really easy. A Laker fan, a guy that grew up in purple, interviewing Larry Bird. It'll be very easy for you. Hour two.
Yeah,
it's going to be easy.
I don't know who's more excited. I mean, me? Probably not me. I mean, I'm happy, but I don't know if like I'm excited. Like Lou. And you get to be reunited with your long-lost best buddy.
Well, I'd say this. Larry Bird's like my white whale.
He is?
Yeah, I've never met him.
Oh.
And I've been lucky enough playing in here, meeting a lot of very cool people.
You meet Bobby Orr?
I met Bobby Orr.
Oh,
great
you did?
Guy. Yeah.
And you,
Ray
you play with
you
David
know,
Ortiz.
The guys, yeah, all those guys. Pedro
you meet
Ortiz.
Ray Allen? You meet Ray
no,
Allen?
No, I'm just saying. Red Sox greats. You met all them. Yeah.
And he played with Nomar.
Oh, yeah.
And he hung with Nomar.
Yeah. That's right.
Jim who's Rice, the, Dwight Evans, Carl Yastrzemski. Red Sox guys, you know?
Yeah.
Larry Bird, he's the guy.
And I also feel like I feel like he's a little mysterious. I mean,
he doesn't talk an awful
lot. It's like
he
doesn't talk. There's not a lot of public appearances. He's just kind of happy and content, kind of staying, just staying underground.
Yeah, if you saw that whole thing, the documentary with him and Magic and saw some of that stuff and Jackie McMullen was heavily involved in a book or whatever, he was really into that because the whole Magic relationship was kind of developed over the years, and he's got a great relationship. Let me remind you, this hour is being brought to you by McFarlane Energy. For this hour only, McFarlane Energy is now matching donations up to $1,000. So if you donate $25, they're going to give us a second $25, and your contribution
beautiful.
Will end up being $50. Okay, so it's a terrific deal. All you have to do is go to WEEI.com/25. WEEI.com/25. Now, let's bring this Kaepernick thing back up, and then we'll get to Larry Bird here in about a half an hour. Because the Kaepernick thing to me is, I still don't understand what the hell the NFL is doing. I don't understand the gain in all of this.
You feel like they were playing chicken? I feel like there was this, I don't trust, no one trusts anybody. There was supposed to be a handshake, maybe call it a cold war of sorts, as far as how the relationship went. There was collusion, they filed a settlement, Jay-Z comes on board, and you kind of feel like, all right, you've kind of moved past it, because I felt like the Colin Kaepernick issue wasn't even being brought up, even though we used to put team after team after team on the Colin Kaepernick clock when their guy got hurt. We weren't even doing that anymore.
But, Christian, I almost think it makes the NFL look even dumber. So every team in the league had the opportunity to bring him in and take a look at him, especially in the offseason, week one, week two, week three, when you're still learning your system, and maybe he can pick it up halfway through the year or whatever and be helpful to the team as a backup quarterback. Instead, nobody did that. So you give the illusion here that teams were afraid to do it because the league they frowned upon it. They didn't want him to do it. Now you almost get the impression by them, the league now, conducting this tryout on Saturday that Kaepernick knew nothing about, that the league is on him now. We're okay with it.
Well, the other thing, too, I remember the one that caught my eye last night was Schefter when he tweeted out, as Colin Kaepernick tweeted, the NFL did inform his reps till Saturday's workout in Atlanta until this morning. Kaepernick's reps asked for a workout to be on Tuesday, the day of most workouts, but the NFL said it had to be this Saturday.
Because you could get coaches.
But then he added, he asked for a later Saturday, and the NFL said no. So when I read that, I was like, oh, here we go. I'm not ready. You know what I mean? It's almost scheduling a title fight in a month. I'm not ready. So they asked for a later Saturday. So, and then I think later on, I think other people have tweeted out that this is really more about teams wanting to know, you know, maybe a level of interest for next year. So if it's not about this year, if it is about next year, why not then just say, okay, week 13 then. We'll give you two more weeks. But then Kaepernick tweeted he's been ready for 3 years. So we'll see. The question I always had is, like, you know, where was this a while ago? Where was this in week one? You know, if you really wanted to give this guy a chance to play. I understand the flip side argument that I've heard is that, well, we sure Kaepernick wants to play? Like, if you're his side, wouldn't you be pushing for it? I've always felt that if this guy really wanted to play football, he would have done like everybody else. He would have done like Johnny Manziel. Go to the CFL. Put something on tape. Show somebody in this league that you can still play. Hell, go to the AAF. You know, play in that league.
Yeah, he wanted $10 million.
$10-20 million. It was just like, whatever. But just go put something on film. Yeah, you got a nice workout, but wouldn't the three or four games in any one of these leagues, I don't care the competition or not, the CFL is pretty good. Wouldn't that have been better than a workout?
See, I think he's got a problem with all of that, though, because there is a political backing here. He has a lot of support, as we've noticed. And he's now an activist, and he stands for a specific reason, and he's the brave one. He's the one that's going to he's going to stand up for it. He's going to stand, sit or kneel during the national anthem. That works for him as an activist. So now if he suddenly goes back to the National Football League and he agrees to abide by the rules and the owner says, hey, you got to stand for the national anthem. Okay, yeah, but dude, I want to play football.
Go back.
What happens? What happens to his activism? What happens to people that are politically behind him?
Glenn, we're past that. When he was a free agent with the San Francisco 49ers, and that date came up where the San Francisco 49ers either needed to sign him or cut him or whatever, they released him. Hey, we're both happy. Good luck to you. Good luck to you. His agent came out and said, just so everybody's clear, he's not kneeling anymore. We've all talked about it. We know that's an issue. We don't want to make it, and we don't make a big deal out of it anymore. He's willing to. He just wants to play, guys. So if that was an issue or concern of yours, don't worry about it. He's not gonna upset the apple cart.
Yeah, but then he changed his mind about 2 weeks later.
And why
somebody
do you think
brought
he
it up? And because he got backlash.
Why?
He got backlash.
Well, because he knew nobody was going to sign him. So he said, "Screw it, I'm all in. If I can't play in the league, and I've already kind of identified it. And oh, by the way, Nike is calling, and they're like, hey, we have this campaign, we have this idea." You can make more money and have a bigger impact on everything.
That's true.
If you come join and sign with
us. That's true. But I really believe that part of this for him is he is the face now of this political movement, and he knows it. Now, it's amazing that he's the face because he's had the opportunity, I'm sure, to do every interview in the world on every network news show that there is. And he's shown up nowhere because he doesn't want to talk. He doesn't want to expound on what he believes. He just wants to leave it like I'm the face and let's leave it as that. But I think if he comes back to the National Football League and he is no longer the face of that political position, people will turn on him.
Well,
Those people will turn on him.
Yeah, especially if he's, you know, say Michael Bennett. While he was here, I don't know, were you guys even aware that he didn't come out for the anthem?
I was not.
In the locker room?
We never even talked about it.
Wasn't even a story.
No.
Right? It will be with Kaepernick.
Absolutely.
If he is on a team, you know, they're going to, you know, his followers are going to expect him to kneel still, right? Because there's still issues in this country. So you'd expect him to kneel.
Well, how did
what if he doesn't? Like Michael Bennett now goes to Dallas and all of a sudden he's out there for the anthem. Can Kaepernick do this?
That was a story in Dallas, though, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
It
you know, and the league wants nothing to do with that. Nothing. They do not want to go back to that point in time.
Then what are they doing
when
with this?
They were having
then what are they doing?
The buck.
No, they're calling his bluff. I think it's one big giant game of chicken. That's what I think.
Well,
it
I'm
is.
Just saying, if you're an owner, right, of this team, if you're a GM of this team, you know, a coach in this league, aren't you sitting there right now after like they announce, you know, this tryout? Aren't you sort of looking at Roger Goodell like, really, dude?
Week 11.
You're putting this on us now? Like, you're not, now we got to, you know, like how, like the Patriots, like someone's saying, like, will you send someone down? I mean, I guess due diligence you would, but you're sitting there saying, well, we're good.
Why would you send somebody down, though?
Because you have to.
Because you're fearful of your fan base and how they're going to react.
I just read, like, you know, we played Bill Belichick earlier. We have that Belichick question again. Now, just before you hear this answer, I just saw some tweet and some story up from some woman from the Globe. I don't know who it was. I forget the name.
It was from the Globe.
Saying that Bill Belichick sidesteps the question. Listen, we've been here many times with Bill Belichick, you know, and questions he doesn't answer. But
we've heard sidestepping.
I mean, I don't know. Listen to this. Listen to Bill.
Bill, I was wondering if the organization is planning to have someone in Colin Kaepernick's workout on Saturday.
Yeah, it's something we could check with Nick on. I'm not sure.
So check with Nick.
Check with Nick, the personnel guy.
Put it all on Nick.
Like, you know Bill Belichick. Do you think he cares about anything other than what's going to happen Sunday in Philadelphia?
No, you don't think he's going to be there in Atlanta?
Saturday? But, you know, it's just
Can't stop on the way to Philly?
Like, honestly, right now, he doesn't even care whether his scouts, who they're watching right now. He's only concerned with playing the Philadelphia Eagles and trying to beat them. We know that.
Yeah, I can confirm that.
So that answer, like, you going to have someone down there? I don't know. Check with Casario the whole on thing, it. I have no clue.
The whole thing is a sham, guys.
Oh, he's sidestepping it. Like, so the Patriots, every organization will have someone there. Now, it might be the assistant to the assistant to the assistant. Hell, it might be a ball boy. It might be a video guy. I have no clue. But someone will be there from the New England Patriots.
Because you have to almost, because the media will sit there and there's going to be a roll call. We're going to get check marks. Who showed up?
He said Linda.
Right.
You like Atlanta.
because it's all politically motivated. So they're going to be check marks. I would say this. I think very few guys would show up if a quarterback who's even better than him, that is more viable than him, that has played in the last 3 years, announced that he was going to have a workout in week 11. Why would you show up in week 11? How quickly can you learn what we're doing in week 11?
But here's the thing, and people will say this. Matt Moore was coaching high school football in Valencia, California.
Yeah, and they brought him in.
And they brought him in, and wow, look at him. And hey, guys, Colin Kaepernick is better than Matt Moore.
So
what do you think, if Matt Moore can get on a team and win a game against the Minnesota Vikings, and then you're telling me Colin Kaepernick can't do a better job? See, that's where the whole debate is going to go back and forth, and I just don't like the gamesmanship, and that's what I think it is. So what's in it for the NFL?
Well,
does it clear their conscience? Listen, is that what it is?
No, please.
Jay-Z forced you to do it, and
that may be, and that's why I'm trying to figure it out, because it really doesn't make any sense. This thing was totally dead. Okay, nobody was talking about Kaepernick, totally dead, and the NFL decided, and it sounds to me like at the last minute, because Kaepernick knew nothing about it, they decided at the last minute, this is what we're going to do. So I don't know. Is it the emergence of Lamar Jackson? Oh, scrambling quarterback. Wait a minute. The league has changed. He's the AFC Offensive Player of the Week for 2 weeks in a row.
Could be the
MVP.
Maybe
it's changed.
Let me throw this Kaepernick can play now. At you on Saturday. I like this. This guy just tweeted at me about this. My boy Dice.
Dice?
You haven't muted him.
You missed
him yet.
That?
Yeah, I know.
It's the one guy that's not muted.
So, now correct me if I'm wrong, but Kaepernick's going to need someone to catch passes for him on Saturday, right?
Yeah, he's not going to throw on.
I wonder if there's an NFL-ready wide receiver out there who's a free agent.
That would be awesome.
Who would be able to catch a pass from Colin Kaepernick.
Antonio!
In front of other NFL teams. I wonder if Antonio Brown flies up to Atlanta on Saturday and says, I got you. I want to make you look good. Throw the ball to AB.
AB catches the ball. Miami.
That's what AB does.
Yeah, you really want
to look good?
Well, hold on. You really want the conspiracy?
You can't overthrow
you really,
AB.
You really want the conspiracy?
Yes, please.
Gronk is on his way to Atlanta.
Oh, that's what it is.
He's going to throw a pass to Gronk.
Hold on. Is there a back? Ray Rice? Can we get Ray Rice? Can we get Ray Rice, Gronk, and AB?
No, but if you're AB, aren't you approaching like Kaepernick's camp and saying, who better to make you look better than maybe you are than have me catch balls for you? I'll be there. What time? Why wouldn't he do it?
I would sit there and say stupid.
I think it makes a ton of sense.
But Kaepernick probably looks at AB and says, clown show. I'm doing serious business here. I got serious business. I'm changing lives here.
Who's more likely?
You got civil cases left and right. I don't want you in my camp.
Week 11, who's more likely to be on an NFL roster between now and the end of the season? Probably not high for either one of them. AB or Kaepernick.
AB.
I agree.
AB.
I agree. Lou?
AB.
Yeah.
Yeah. Better player. I mean, he instantly impacts the game.
He's viable.
He's still the best at his position.
But here's the thing. So we listed off a bunch of teams that would be an ideal situation for Colin Kaepernick. Baltimore's one of them. Arizona would be another one. What's the other one? I can't even think of another one. Seattle, which kind of kicked the tires a little bit, but decided to sign somebody else. Remember that? That was an option for him.
They didn't bring him in, though. They didn't even bring him in.
Kansas City, maybe. But what if you're a team like Cincinnati? What if you haven't won a freaking game, and you just want to sell tickets, and you want to be part of the woke crowd? Wouldn't you call him and say, you know what? We got this guy, Ryan Lindley. He sucks. We don't like Andy Dalton anymore. He sucks. You know what? We'd rather just give you the ball and just, you know, four games.
Christian, I think it's all lip service. I think you saw it in Seattle. Seattle talked about bringing him in. It opened up the door to people writing stories, and they never brought him in. Let me go to Eric in New Hampshire, who wants to talk about Kaepernick. Go ahead, Eric.
Hey, good afternoon, fellas. Thanks for having me on. The first thing, I'd like to give Christian a shout-out. I love and appreciate what you're doing for the cause. Good luck with
Thanks, buddy.
25 for 25. A couple points here. Can the NFL be that dumb for a billion-dollar industry to make a decision to think they can be done with Colin Kaepernick by having this dog and pony show and thinking he's going to go away? All they did was pour gas on the fire.
Yeah,
he's been, and I'll apologize to Lou here, he was the godfather of the counterculture movement. I think they're pissed at him, and I think they want to get rid of him and be done with him. But all this has done is inflamed everybody. Now it's back in the front lines. I don't get it.
No,
you're right. They're bringing it back up.
I think if they're having some sort of like powwow, some, you know, how do we take advantage and get 15 minutes more of this situation? They just keep coming out with more ideas of how to keep their tentacles into the NFL, because having their tentacles in the NFL is good for business. It is. It's good for everything. It just keeps it alive. It keeps people on their side. It keeps revenue coming in. It keeps advertisers. That's what it does. That him playing is terrible for business.
I got one more point, fellas, if you'll let me make it. If nobody signs him after this dog and pony sham workout, is he going to get another settlement from the NFL for not being able to play?
Can he sue for nobody showing up?
No, he can sue for collusion. It was a dog and pony show. You made the whole thing up. There was no chance of me ever playing.
Yeah.
You embarrassed me. You hurt my earning power out there because you made me into a fool. Yeah, why wouldn't he?
I don't think it comes to a head until next year in camp. Because everything you hear now is this has really got more to do with would teams be interested in the future.
Yeah.
So you can have a workout. Teams can sit there for the next 8-10 months and say, yeah, we were there. We saw him. We liked what we saw. Okay. Okay, well, we'll see. You know, do you sign him next year going into camp? Is he a backup, third-string quarterback? Is he in camp next year? That's when, you know, we'll have opinions on this, I think, on Monday or over the weekend. People will be writing about it, and, you know, it was a sham, it was this, it was that, it was everything else. But we really won't know the outcome of what happens here on Saturday until next year, next summer.
All right, we'll get into more of this stuff coming up in a couple of minutes. We're also going to talk about Don Cherry, who showed up last night on Fox on Tucker Carlson's show at 8 o'clock. And most people apologize, and then they find a way of getting back into the flow. Nope, he doubled down last night.
No idea. All right, let's go.
He is not apologizing. We'll get to all of that as well. 617-779-7937, Larry Bird, coming up at 3:30.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We're back with more Ordway, Merlone, and Fourier on Sports Radio WEEI.
Very few people wear a poppy. Downtown Toronto, forget it, downtown Toronto, nobody wears a poppy. And I'm not going to wait. He says, wait a minute. How about running it for the people that buy them? Now, you go to the small cities, and you know those, the rows on rows. You people love, you that come here, whatever it is, you love our way of life, you love our milk and honey. At least you could pay a couple of bucks for poppies or something like that. These guys pay for your way of life that you enjoy in Canada. These guys paid the biggest price. Anyhow, I'm going to run it again for you great people and good Canadians that bought a poppy. I'm still going to run it anyhow.
Buy the poppy! So anyway, that was Don Cherry over the weekend on Sportsnet up in Canada. Got himself in all sorts of trouble, like always happens. Nobody that was working on the telecast thought anything of it, including Ron McLean, who was on the air with him, to the point where they actually, you ready for this? They replayed that entire program later on that evening. Nobody even thought anything about it. And then what you had was the very next day, you had people who were calling up, and it was the silent majority out there, a minority, and they were making a big, huge stink about it. And, of course, they got to Labatt's, and Labatt's Labatt's.
I thought you said Lovebots.
No, Labatt's, L-A-B-A-T-T-S. Okay. They're part of Anheuser-Busch now.
You just call it Blue.
Huh? Blue. You call it Blue. He's in Canada. Eh? You call it Blue.
You want a Blue? I want a Blue.
That's what
blue.
You call it.
Give me 4 Blues.
So they got to them, and we all have learned that when you get to the advertisers, then everybody freaks out, and that's what happened. And so he got himself into trouble. So a lot of people thought he was just going to simply apologize, 85 years old, set in his ways. What he said was probably a little bit crude. You people was the line that got him into trouble.
Don't say you people.
And so he goes on Tucker Carlson's show last night on Fox News Channel and started with this, talking about saying hello to Bobby Orr out there in the audience.
I got to tell you, Tucker, that Bobby Orr is watching, and he's a big fan of yours, and Liz is all excited because she's from Boston. Liz is from Boston. Mom's watching, so I had to say that right off the start. Evidently, I did a great thing, I thought, on Mastami, and he had his book about diabetes. I did for two young lads that died, 15 and 17. That was never mentioned. I did a great thing, I thought, for 1,500 troops that were at a hockey game at Brampton, and they were all forgotten. The one thing that got me, it was you people. And I suppose if I had it to do over again, I would have said everybody, but you people are the people that they listen to. The silent majority, as you know, are always silent. The police are with me, the forces are with me, everybody's with me, and the firefighters, the whole deal. But it doesn't make any sense. And I was brought in, and I was told that I was fired after 38 years. And, you know, I stand by what I said, and I still mean it.
All right, so we gave you a hello, a shout-out to Bobby Orr, who will join us tomorrow. We'll ask Bobby about this. He got a shout-out on Tucker Carlson's show.
But you knew when they fired him, there was no apology. Well, that's what I'm saying. We knew that he wasn't going to do it.
No. You know his nature.
Say, if you go on the air and apologize, we can clean this thing up, and he's probably like, no, I don't apologize.
But here's the problem with society today, and I have a real issue with this one. I don't know how you guys feel, but to me, you know, he should have explained what he meant by all of that, because it was a little bit of undertones there. No question about that. But why are we apologizing every time somebody disagrees with us on a point? Why don't we, instead of firing these people, why don't we bring them on the air and say, explain yourself?
Let me ask you a question.
Let the people who are offended hear exactly what you have to say, and maybe we have a dialogue about it.
I was thinking about this. You said, you people, again, like, you people is just, what do you mean, you people? Right? Who are you talking? But what if he didn't say you people? And what if he said immigrants who have come to this country, who enjoy our freedom, should pay respect to the veterans?
Well, that would have been a little
worse,
more clear.
Kind of,
No, but it would have been worse.
No, I'm just saying. So instead of saying, you think it's worse?
I think that would have been worse, believe it or not.
That would have been him explaining it.
But no, I was serious. I was like, he said you people, and that's like just a bad phrase to people. But if he did say, like, the immigrants that have come to this country should pay respect to those soldiers that have lost their lives or soldiers that fought for our freedom, they should respect it and all wear poppies.
But he's 85, no, and he shoots from the hip anyway, so he's careless with his words. That, he steps all over himself. So the fact is that's...
chewy tobacco and all
come
that
on,
thing
listen to this guy. Are we kidding
No, I know
you?
He's crazy, but I mean, I'm just saying, like, what if he said that? Would we sit there and say, I can't believe you said immigrants should come and respect this country?
Lou, what do you think the...
No, he'd be fine. You know what? He's
who do you
fine.
Think, who do you think were complaining? The people that were complaining were people that are supportive of immigrants who are coming into Canada. That's what he was doing. And he had to defend himself last night by talking about all of the different things he does for different groups. All right? That's what he was doing, different races.
Yeah.
He was purposely doing
that.
The
thing he does with dogs.
Right. Right. So dogs and humans. Yeah. He went the full gambit. To me, this
so
is...
So you think he still would have been in trouble if he said that?
I do. It, because
Boy,
I think those
I
are the
I
people.
Don't at all.
Oh, I do.
No,
oh,
I think,
sure.
I think
absolutely.
I think the trigger.
Oh, if he blamed it on the immigrants.
The trigger was
the immigrants that are in this country,
right,
should pay respect to our veterans.
Right. He would
you lose your job over that.
No, if he said that immigrants were the ones that were not buying the poppies, that they don't respect, the military. Yes, he'd be in trouble. Yes. But, Don. Why? How do you know that they're the immigrants? Do you
because he's stereotyping?
Exactly.
And I'm sure there are some immigrants that are wearing poppies.
Exactly.
That are very proud of this country.
And he did stereotype by talking about different particular geographical areas, downtown Toronto.
Yeah, he said small towns in Canada are still wearing poppies.
Urban America is still,
Toronto
patriotic. Toronto, they're protesters.
The thing that also stood out, and here's who he is, okay? So he was even trying to say, listen, I've done a lot of good things. I did this, I did that, and these people. But it's like one time, one issue comes up in my entire 38 career, and you want to just appease the masses? Not even the masses, the minority?
Welcome to 2019.
No, I know. And that's the reality of it. So we should all be scared.
So should he have been fired?
You should be petrified. No, he should not.
Should he have been fired?
What do you think?
No.
I mean, even if he doesn't want to apologize, why do you? It's like, I don't like when other sanctions or sides, I don't even know what to say right now, start adopting phrases that are meant for one thing, but then suddenly become something else.
Christian, you could view it as being a harsh, maybe a little bit edgy to the point where you are in pointing out a specific group of people, but we're losing freedom of speech. We're losing the idea that you can say anything, and I believe anybody should have the right to do it. You shouldn't be firing people. What you should be doing, though, is you should be at least opening up the dialogue. So maybe he learned something. Maybe everybody else learned something. But nobody's willing to do it.
He didn't learn anything.
But nobody's willing to do it.
He's not changing.
No.
Good for him.
But that's what you did. You just took a guy that's 85 years of age, that is strong-willed, and you're not changing him. What you're doing is you're trying to eliminate anybody that doesn't agree with you. All right, let me just tell you right now, we have unbelievable items right now, auction items that are for bid right now. When you have to text WEEI to 71760. Get a piece of paper and a pen. I'm going to give you that number again. So here's what we've got. We've got a pair of tickets to see the Patriots, including a special on-field experience. Trust me, I've done this before. You want to do this. Take the kids out on the field. Players are out there. It's incredible. How about this from the Boston Celtics? A pair of floor seats to see the Celtics take on the Spurs. You're going to be on the floor right there. The players are going to be right next to you.
The Wahlburgers.
By the Wahlburgers.
Who knows?
Maybe Patriot players, they sit there, and you're going to get an opportunity, obviously, since they're sitting there before the game, halftime, to walk out on the court a little bit. Unbelievable. From the Boston Bruins, a pair of tickets to see the Bruins and an exclusive high five experience for a child.
Oh, that's nice.
How naive am I? So he's done this with his kids.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it's a high five experience. Oh, look, there's a bouncy house. Yeah. Oh, high five each other while you're in the bouncy house. No, this is actually kind of cool.
By the way, I'm the same height as Tory Krug, except that his skates make him a little bit taller than me, okay? But you could stand there and high five the place. It's unbelievable. How about the Boston Red Sox coming through? Four green monster seats for a Red Sox game against the New York Yankees. Yankee fans, green monster seats for a game against the Yankees. Four of them, and you get a pregame tour. And you know what that means, Lou? You get to go behind the scoreboard up in left field.
With Manny P?
The tour. You don't get to pee.
Oh.
You don't get to pee. You get to go in there.
Okay.
And thanks to the Pawtucket Red Sox as well.
That's the one I want.
They're helping out a ceremonial first pitch at a Paw Sox game next year, 2020. Includes four premium seats. You get a VIP tour of the stadium.
That's a nice
on-field
trip,
photo. Unbelievable. And again, the first pitch.
Embarrass
one of your best friends.
Yes, right?
Have him throw the first pitch.
Have your dad get embarrassed.
These are unbelievable.
No, I want this one. I can't get on the Red Sox.
So you got to text WEEI to 71760.
Yep.
All right. Check out those items.
Again, WEEI to 71760. We should get 25 grand right there.
Easily.
For those, they're unbelievable. If you're in search of a car battery that won't let you down, even at the lowest temperatures, AutoZone has you covered. They have the proven tough Duralast batteries that you need to plow through winter. They're tested in the most extreme conditions, so you can count on them to deliver when you need it most. Just visit AutoZone.com to learn more. We mentioned that we're trying to fill out Mount Rushmore with the greatest sports athletes in Boston's history. We kick it off coming up next with...
With who?
What?
We kick it off coming up
next. Are you sure you're right?
I believe so. With Larry Bird.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
All right, back here on OMF, we are interviewing Boston's greatest athletes. A pretty good history here in the city of Boston, and a special day today. And Christian's put this all together, and we're doing it for the American Diabetes Association. So this is my favorite guy.
Okay,
this is the guy.
What a
that,
surprise!
Yeah, it's my guy. I mean, I watch
a lot of people's guys.
He's particularly mine, Lou. Okay. Screw you.
Oh, you can have.
Yeah, he was a guy that I watched virtually every single game, and I still marvel at the things he was able to do. Larry Bird joins us. Mr. Bird, how are you today?
Everything's good, Glenn. Good to hear you.
Well, it's good to hear you as well. We're all getting old, but we're still hanging in there, right?
Well, nobody's getting out of this alive, so enjoy.
I couldn't believe it. I looked it up today. You have been around the NBA now for 40 years. Player, coach, executive, 40 freaking years you have been in the NBA. So you've seen all of the transitions, the change of the game. And I wonder, when you look at the game now, people don't understand this. You took under 2 3-point shots per game in your career. There were years you shot 42%. But you'd only take two shots in a game because the game was different. How about today's game? If you were playing in today's game with guys like Harden, guys like Curry, taking 13, 14 three-pointers in a game, what would your game be like?
Well, obviously, we'd be taking more three-pointers because that's where the game is evolving. But, you know, back in the day, Glenn, we would even guard guys out beyond the three-point line, and very few guys even looked at the basket, you know, from 23 to 25 feet. But the game has changed, and the game goes through periods where it changes, and you just have to adapt to the changes. And that's what we would have done. We would adapt. I can remember back in the day, Danny Ainge said we should have shoot all three-pointers every game. He said the percentages go by, you know, anybody would do that. And the first time I really seen it was in college with Rick Pitino. They started shooting a lot of threes, and, you know, everybody was sort of questioning it. But that's where the game is now, and I like it. I think it opens the floor up. You know, back when we played, everything was pound and fold inside, just pound, pound, pound. And we always worried about the court wasn't big enough. Now it's spread out, court's more open, and I believe you can show your talents off a little bit more.
You know, when you talk about changes and the difference between when you played and how the game is played now, it may have seemed silly back in the 80s and early 90s, but the idea that the NBA would actually add a four-point line, like forget about pushing the three-point line back, maybe you keep the three-point line, add a four-point line. I heard Adam Silver say that a couple weeks ago. Would you be a fan of that?
Well, it's definitely a major change, but you can remember 10 or 15 years ago, they moved the three-point line up, and eventually they got smart about it and moved it back. But a four-point line really wouldn't make that much difference. I think that the problem with that, there'd be guys shooting, and there'd be a lot of air balls and a lot more fast breaks. But it really doesn't matter. I mean, the league's always looking at ways to speed the game up and score more points. And if they did it, I wouldn't be surprised. But I like the game where it is now, and I think it's doing fine.
You know, Larry, one of the differences, I think, in today's game as well is it seems like the building of these super teams, right? USA basketball, the Olympic team, guys get together, they're friends through college or whatever it might be, and next thing you know, they're forcing their way out of cities or they're joining each other's teams and somewhere else. Do you like that in the NBA right now? Can you envision it back when you guys were playing? But it just seems like a big change here in the NBA.
Well, it is, and we've seen it back in our day. You've seen where Bill Walton joined us in 86. You see where Kareem forced his way out of Milwaukee to go to the Lakers. So it's been going on for years, but not to the magnitude it is now. My problem with it, if you're a free agent, you can go anywhere you want and join any team you want. But when you start forcing your way out of teams, it's usually the small markets, too, that draft a guy, put all our time in, develop him, and when he gets really good, he wants to go somewhere else. But if you just wait until your free agent goes somewhere, I have no problem with it. But it sort of bothers me when guys want to leave a team that they're on, they still have a few years left, and force their way out because it puts a lot of pressure on management and the franchise.
Do you watch any of Walton on TV when he does those basketball games? Oh, my God.
I have seen Bill on TV, but Bill's Bill, and he's going to do what he does best.
Oh, my God.
Would he be one of your favorite teammates? If you're going to line up all the guys you played with, would he stand out as maybe, you know, top three for you in your list?
I think that the team I played on 86, if you ask all of us, Bill would probably be number one for all of us. We enjoyed him immensely. I mean, he was a great addition, and he was a blast to play with.
Do you remember? Did he talk as much then? Like just with no pauses, no commas, no breaks at all back then like he does now?
No, we wouldn't let him talk back then. We just told him rebound and block shots.
Do you remember him the first game of that season? It was a game in New Jersey. You guys lost
New Jersey.
The game.
He was awful. We lost in overtime, and it was Bill's fault.
Do you remember what he said? Do you remember what he said after the game? He told you. What did he tell you guys?
I think he said it was the worst game he's ever played.
He said he should quit right now. He said, I should quit right now. I'm done. And you're sitting there going, oh, you dumbass, get back out here.
Yeah, he didn't play well, and we didn't play well, but we got beaten overtime, and then we end up winning some games from then on.
You know, Larry, do you ever, I don't know how much you of a big of a football fan you are, if you watch football, have you been paying attention at all to what's going on down in Foxborough, and do you kind of relate it to what you guys were able to do with the Celtics? I mean, the amount of years this team has been successful has been, it's unheard of.
Yeah, it's one of the greatest franchises that you could ever even seen or talk about. I mean, with Brady and Belichick, I mean, it's just amazing what they've been able to accomplish over the last, 20 years. I never seen it coming, but I'm glad it happened. And I do watch the Patriots play. I watch the Colts play, my two favorite teams. and I like to watch the Bears play because I like to see them get beat.
Have you ever met Tom Brady, Bill Belichick?
Never have. No, never.
Oh,
have.
We got to make that happen. Yeah. How has that not happened? I'm
in Indiana and they're in Boston.
I mean, but the Patriots do play the Colts on occasions. I think we may be able to get you some sideline passes the next time they play.
Well, kind of that yeah, that thing with you and with Peyton Manning and Tom Brady was kind of similar to you and Magic going through that period, right?
Yeah. The one thing about me and Irvin, we played against each other in college, and we played on some college all-star teams before that. So it was always there. Then we got into pros. It's fortunate not only for us, but the league, that he went to the Lakers and I went to the Celtics. So that made it even better.
You know, they always talk about how you two kind of saved the NBA at that time, you know, and obviously the rivalry you mentioned from college to the NBA, was it always just sort of hatred because you knew he was there? I know as you guys get older, maybe that friendship starts to build, I would guess.
Well, I just admired the guy so much, and I wanted to beat him so bad, and vice versa. There's no question Irvin wanted to beat us every time. And in college, it all started, and it just, you know, kept going. But we did help the NBA, Irvin and I. But David Stern, you got to remember, took over in 84 as the leader of the league and as a commissioner, and things really started happening then. They started promoting the individual players, really as much as the teams back then. And then you got to remember, after that, it was Isaiah came in 82, then in 85, it was Jordan, Reggie Miller, Patrick Ewing, Charles, you know, just kept going on and on and on, and Karl Malone, John Stockton, and the league just grew from there.
So we're seeing these young kids come in. They're 18, 19 years old, okay? What is that? The ice cream truck? Is the ice cream truck showing up to your house every day? Hey, save one for me, okay? So we're seeing young kids, 18, 19 years of age. People don't realize this. You came into the league. You were 23 years of age, but a month later, on December the 7th, because we never forget your birthday, a month later, you turned 24. Now, you get dropped into a city like Boston, young kid, trying to become an adult or whatever. What do you think it's like for these young kids, 18, 19? You're working with these young kids now. Getting dropped in at a young age like that, not only do they have to learn the NBA game, but they got to learn life.
Yeah, the difference is if you're a European player coming over, they've already played pro ball for 2 years, so they got a feel about, you know, how it's going to be. But when you get kids from America coming in, they have no clue, and that's why it always takes them, Glenn, 3 to 4 years to develop and learn. But that's a young age, and I never was for that. I always thought college was one of the greatest experiences, and get some, you know, get some opportunity to meet people and play basketball without all the pressure. Then they come in, and if you listen to every one of them, they think they're going to be the next star, and it don't happen. Some come out all right, but most of them don't do as well, and that's a young age. I mean, you're right. I came in at 22, 23, and I didn't know if I was ready then, let alone being 18 years old and think about going to the pros. So it's different. The kids are probably more mature now than we were at 22, 23 back then, because they've seen more and they've done more. And I think the AAU game has helped that. They traveled a lot. They've been on travel teams. And when I grew up, we didn't play. We played in the summer, but we played, you know, with my buddies. We didn't get to travel around and play against other players. So the game has changed, and kids are coming in a lot younger, but I wish they could do something to at least go to school for a couple of years, but whatever.
All right, we're talking to Celtics legend and NBA Hall of Famer Larry Bird. And Larry, a lot of the athletes that come into this city in Boston, we've seen it before. They can't handle, whether it's the attention, the scrutiny, the media. With your background, small town, French Lick, you're at Indiana for a year, you leave, you're away from the game, or college for a year, you go to Indiana State, you get dropped into this city. Why did it work for you, you know, coming from a small town background for you, as opposed to maybe other guys that can't handle it?
I don't know. You can ask Glenn. I mean, he was there every day, and I just handle it the way I handle it. You know, some days I felt like talking to media, and some days I didn't. I always enjoyed being around them, because you got to remember back then they were with us on all of our buses and all of our planes, and so we knew these guys, their families really, and it was pretty amazing because we spent a lot of time with them. But I don't know. I just went day by day, and Glenn can tell you I'm pretty moody, and some days were better than others, but I love to play basketball, and I was in the right place to play because the fan base supported us, and I had great teammates, and You know, I just wanted to win games. I got paid to win games, and that's all I cared about.
I'm just happy you finally figured out you were moody. Thank you. Took you how many years? Finally figured it out.
Well, I just found that out last year.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in L.A., and I hate to tell you, but I'm glad I'm waiting until you're actually on the phone to tell you that I grew up a Lakers fan in the 80s. And what I know. But when I moved out here to play for the Patriots, I was just surprised at how there was this stigma attached to the city of Boston where NBA players didn't want to play for the Celtics. And I personally couldn't believe it because it's the Celtics. Why would you not want to play for the Celtics? Why would you not want to be in Boston, one of the greatest sports cities of all time? But yet there is this the stigma attached to it. Is that real or is that just fake news?
You know, I don't know. I mean, when I went to Boston, I didn't know nothing about it. And when I got out there, it didn't take long that I really enjoyed the city. And when the game started, I loved to play in the Garden, and my teammates were there. And I don't know. You know, I just think it's the greatest place in the world to play any sport, whether it's football, basketball, or baseball. Now, there's some guys that are sensitive, and they can't take the media, and the media's a little harsh on them, and the families get involved, and it's different for everyone. But in my case, we sort of just went with the flow and did what we had to do, and knowing that we had to win the next game. That's all I thought about. You have your ups and downs, you have your injuries, but overall, I didn't think it was a hard place to play. And, you know, but there's some guys that didn't enjoy playing there, but there's a lot of guys that really enjoy playing there. And then there's guys that went there, didn't want to go there, and found out they loved it more than they ever thought they would. So it's the stigma is one thing, but once they get there and get settled in, you got the best fans in the world in every sport, and they're diehard sports fans, and they're going to back you. The one thing you got to remember, if you're going to play there, you better play hard. And if you do that, you'll be fine.
Christian and I have talked about this on the show numerous times because coming from L.A., you know, the stereotype was the Lakers were the black team and Boston was the white team. And you know Red, you know he drafted a black player. He made sure that all the players, black or white, were going to stay at the same hotel. He's not going to stay there. Did that ever piss you off when you'd read stories about that and they would declare the Celtics as being the white team?
You know, Glenn, I don't know. I mean, I never really got into that. Like I said earlier, all I knew when I went out there, I was getting paid to win basketball games. And whoever my teammates were, that's who they were. I was just fortunate to play with a group of guys that had the same mindset. Red Auerbach, the one that changed, it really helped this league out immensely. And Walter Brown, and if it wasn't for them too, I don't think this league would be anywhere close to where it is right now. Because they went through a lot of struggles back in the 50s and 60s and even the 70s at times. But overall, if you really look at the history of the league, it really tough on a lot of people early on. I mean, you read stories about how Russell was treated. It just sort of breaks your heart because I have so much respect for the man. And when I look at Bill Russell, I look at him as a man before a player because he's a stand-up guy. And it's just hard that the struggles they went through, not only in Boston, but when they went on the road and couldn't stay in hotels, couldn't eat at certain places. It does bother me, but hopefully all that's changed. And but just looking at Boston, I mean, it's the greatest place on earth. I mean, people should be fortunate they live there. I mean, it's just great. And you're going to say, well, why don't you live here? Well,
that was my follow-up. Thank you.
I thought French Lakers.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I tell you why I left, because the big dig was coming in when I was leaving. I knew that was going to be 20-some years.
You know, Larry, legendary stuff when it comes to you as far as being a Celtics fan and growing up here is just the trash talk. I mean, we've seen the documentaries and calling your shots. And was there one great trash-talking moment that you can remember that was one of your favorites?
Not really. I mean, I didn't do it. I mean, after you retire, people talk about it more than they did back when we played. But if somebody said something, and sometimes I need motivation, anything that would motivate me, that would get me fired up and adrenaline flowing. And things were said at times, you don't even remember it. But I don't know if there's just one. There's a bunch of them. But I know I had a lot of beefs with Chuck Person. And even though I respected the hell out of him because he played hard every night and you know, and just go around the league, there's a ton of them. And guys would say things. They might not say it directly. You might say it to one of your teammates or somebody else, and you get involved. And it was crazy. I mean, all I wanted to do was win that game and whatever it took. And that's how I felt.
Well, is it true that you would often tell the coach, the opposing coach, to get a guy out of the game because you were about to abuse
yes.
him?
Yes.
We do that quite often.
Yeah. There was a night, I believe it was in Chicago, and you were all pissed off because you had family and friends showing up, and there was a ticket snafu, or what, do you remember this?
Right.
And you walk over to Doug Collins, the coach of the Bulls, and you start reaming his ass out because your tickets were screwed up.
No, it wasn't quite that. I told Doug when he walked out stretching, and I've known Doug forever, good guy, and always respected him, but he walked by me, it was just me and him, and I was laying on the floor stretching, and it was about, 30 seconds before the game started. I said, "Hey, Doug, come here." And he came over. He goes, "How you doing?" And I said, "Good." I said, "You go over and sit down because we're getting ready to pound your asses tonight. And don't take it personal. And I swear to God, he went off on me.
You know what?
So I started chirping back, and we ended up beating him. And I never said anything after. But I couldn't believe he got so mad at me in about 10-second period. I couldn't believe it.
Ready for this?
So then I knew I had to kick his ass, you know.
He had 33 in the first half. In that game, 33 in the first half. And by the way, the Chuck Person stuff, after the third dagger on a Christmas Day game, do you remember what you said to him?
Well, it wasn't Christmas Day. It was before Christmas. Yeah, I know exactly what. I ain't going to say it, but I know exactly what.
Happy effing Christmas. That's what you said.
He wasn't even in the game. He was on the bench where I shot it from.
Well, the crazy thing is that your personality, I think, which we all love and respect and admire, really, the fact that you can not only, talk the talk, but walk the walk. Now, you'd have a cell phone on you. You'd have a recorder. Somebody would paint you as who knows what they would paint you as.
You'd be a bad guy.
You'd be the bad guy. You'd be the villain.
No, I'd be all right. But anyway, I'm just glad I played in the era I did. All these video cameras and phones. Yeah, I probably had myself in trouble quite often.
All right, so Michael Jordan, I don't know when it was, maybe a couple weeks ago, they asked him who his all-time pickup basketball team would be, and you weren't on it, but Pippen was, Magic was, Worthy, and Olajuwon. So I want to give you the same opportunity. If you had an opportunity to pick your all-time best pickup team, who were the four guys you would pick? Obviously, you would be one of the five. I know, this is what we do here.
Yeah. I know. It's tough because you always leave somebody out. But, you could go with any of those top Celtics. I mean, you can go Russell, and I always thought Mikal and Jabbar and Michael, obviously, and Magic. I mean, they're the best, man. And, then you go right below them. You got LeBron. You got Kobe. You got Shaq. There's just so many. So it's hard to pick four.
So your all-time, your top five would be nothing but guys you played with.
There you go.
Yeah, I think that'll work here.
Yeah, it's pretty easy. We handle our own.
I want to ask you, because we keep on talking about Tom Brady, and you talked about him, and we marvel at what he's able to do at age 42 and conditioning or whatever. Your back went on you at about what age? 33, 34 during
32.
That period.
Yeah. 32, yeah.
And I saw what you were going through. You'd go out playing a game, let's say, on the road in Cleveland. You'd put up 26, 27, 13 rebounds, 7, 8 assists. And then you would have trouble walking back to the bus, getting on the plane. They would drop you into this contraption on the plane. Do you remember it? Mr. Back.
And
they would,
Yeah,
they would drop you into that. And then the next night, you'd go back out there and play. And I wonder how you mentally got through that, because physically you were breaking down. You obviously still wanted to play. It eventually ended your career, but how did you fight through all of that?
Well, you remember Dan Dyer.
He
helped me. He's my therapist, and he helped me a lot through a lot of that. But mentally it was really tough because you had to get up. And, there's times where that one year I was going from games, home games, to the hospital getting traction. I don't know if it helped, but, that wasn't for a long period of time. But It was a battle. Mentally, every day, it finally wore me down where I had to get out. So I knew in 92, after Cleveland beat us in, I think it was six or seven games, I knew that was my last game because I just couldn't take it anymore. So it's unfortunate, Glenn, that happened. But the way I played the game from early age all the way through, I knew when I got in the league I wasn't going to have a long career. But I wasn't going to change the way I played. So it is what it is. And I'm pretty healthy now. My back's been feeling pretty decent.
So I'll leave you with this, because you've said this in the past. You're quoted as saying it numerous times, that you never thought you would live a long life. You
feel different? No, 32.
At 32. Do you feel differently now?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, like I always said, you don't see many 7-footers walking around at 70. I've always said that. But anyway, things have changed. People are living longer. You know, you always want to live a healthy life, but you just never know what's going to happen. Right now, I feel pretty healthy, so hopefully I can stick around a while.
Well, we're happy to hear that. We really appreciate you spending some time. It's a big deal for us back here in Boston, trying to raise some money for the American Diabetes Association, and having one of the all-time greats, Boston athletes, on was a privilege for us. So you stay well, all right?
Thank you, Glenn. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, Larry.
Larry Bird, here on OMF.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.